welcome to the Fiber Muse podcast. This is your host, Frenchie, knitwear designer and design coach behind Araha Knits, where I empower fiber artists to transform their yarn so they can manifest more joy, healing, connection, and creativity into their lives one stitch at a time. My work as a knitwear designer focuses on exploring the intersection of the four aspects of making, self-care, self-discovery, self-expression, and selflessness with my journey of making sense of my multicultural identity. And on this podcast, I'll be documenting this journey through interviews with crafters of color, members of the LGBTQ community, and other underrepresented communities in the industry to highlight their stories and learn how their making intersects with their identity. Hello there, Fiber Muses. Frenchie here. So it has certainly been a while since I have created a new episode for the Fiber Muse podcast after returning from France and doing a few more episodes by myself. I took a break in December to really again, once again, sit down and assess what I really wanted to do on the podcast. I think talking about my journey with making and the intersection and all of that stuff was a good place to start, but I found that it's kind of hard for me to be able to get on microphone every week or so to talk about projects that's going on in my life when I don't have anything that much to contribute. Sometimes it's just, hey, I made something this week and nothing really exciting from that. So in December, I really sat down to really figure out, okay, what do I really want to do on this podcast? And I realized that I kind of wanted to take what I'd been doing before, which was interviewing makers in the industry, you know, through the Yarn Alchemist Spotlight, which was done through written word, basically, and bring them into the podcast. So it's combining things that I'd done before and just merging them in together. So it just made sense that I was the people that I was interviewing for the blog, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to interview them for the podcast. And this time I really wanted to focus on makers of color, those in the LGBTQ plus community, or any other underrepresented community in the fiber industry. And especially with the conversations that happened in January of this year, it just really affirmed my commitment and the need for the space for these people's voices to be heard and give them that chance for their stories to be shared. Because in December, I had made that decision. I was like, okay, I'd like to interview people from underrepresented communities. You know, I'm talking about, you know, race, culture, representation. So why not bring in those different voices instead of me just talking every single week? And then with the conversations that happened in January, it was just like, okay, it makes sense that this does need to happen. So this week's guest is Brooke from Fully Spun Yarns. Brooke was seeking something more creatively fulfilling than her day job and found it with Fully Spun, her hand-dyed yarn company. Her mission is to provide high-quality, colorful, beautiful yarn to fiber artists while staying genuine and authentic to what inspires her. Fully Spun is unique in the way that Brooke hand-dyes the wool roving and has it spun at a mill. This process creates an effect similar to the fractal method of hand spinning. Her yarn is also special because every colorway is the translation of a visual or conceptual inspiration. You can find Brooke at her website at www.fullyspun.com. So here's Brooke. But I think first things first, we should probably talk about how we know each other, because
yes,
this is not our first time meeting, actually. Like, I didn't randomly reach out to you and be like, hey, stranger, I want to have you on the podcast. It was just like, I'm thinking that people I want to interview for the podcast, and Brooke is definitely someone I want to talk to, because you were featured in the Dreamer Fiber Muse issue, quarterly issue, which was released February last year.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I still remember my jaw dropping when you sent me the email to say, you know, let's do a collaboration together, and you showed me the pictures of the yarn that you do. And I was like, is this stuff hand spun? Like, this is amazing.
Thank you.
Different colors and stuff like that. And I'll ask you later, I will get into the process of how that's all done and stuff like that. Like, you know, all the technical terms and stuff. And for me, I was just like, this is really pretty. And definitely really captured the spirit of the Dreamer Fiber Music. Fiber Muse, like whenever I think of a Fiber Muse for like the yarn dyers, you're the first person who comes to mind, because just the colors
just so beautiful. And it's also really nice to knit with it, which I also think is really important, because sometimes there are some yarns that are really pretty, but when you knit them up, it's just not the greatest experience sometimes.
Right. Whereas
with yours, like, I think it was the Ice Dreamer colorway that I just really loved knitting up. It was just felt really good in the hands.
Okay, yeah. Good. Well, yeah. That's great, because actually at the time that we worked together, I still was carrying both BFL and Superwash Merino, and mm-hmm. I've since decided to focus on Superwash Merino and then have nylon content and my sock yarn, mm-hmm. but that has enabled me to branch out into multiple bases, so multiple weights, uh-huh. And keep the color depth pretty good. But that would be hard to do that and have multiple breeds.
So I see.
Yeah. So I love the BFL because when I was spinning, that's a great yarn to spin with because it's really easy. It has a little bit longer staple length, so it's easy to manipulate. Mm-hmm. And when you knit with it, it kind of has like a cool drape to it and like a halo. It's definitely wool.
Yeah.
For people who really like wool, like it's not rough. It's pretty soft, but I think the Superwash Merino is a little bit more accessible.
Yeah, for sure. And also I think that was a really good idea just to pick that one base to focus on so you could focus on the different weights and expand your like offerings in that way. Mm-hmm. And also I would sure it help keeps the color consistent across the different weights as well.
Yes, because each breed's wool will take color very differently. So all the BFL colorways were more muted and the Superwash Merino colorways are brighter because it just kind of soaks it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wherever you place it.
Yeah, and I feel like for your brand, having more brighter colors that's just really vibrant is the look that you're going for, I think. Yes. I feel like, just based on what I've seen.
Yes, that's true.
So when did you start spinning and dyeing? Like, how did you come across this technique? Because I don't think I've seen any other dyers like you. Like, how did you, like, how? Like, how did it all start?
So, when I was a kid, I learned how to crochet and knit, mm-hmm. and, you know, didn't really invest too much time in it. But in college, I actually picked it back up as a hobby. I picked crochet back up first and then came across knitting and decided that there was more design effort put into knitting. So it would be easier to find really cool things if I focused on knitting. So I don't really crochet anymore. Mm. But so knitting was my primary hobby. And then I took some fine arts classes. So for example, my painting class, our professor only allowed us to have yellow, blue, red, and white paint. And we had to make all of our colors for our paintings. And so mm-hmm. he really kind of instilled that. And that along with my other interior design classes sort of allowed me to learn really in depth about color theory. And at that time I came across Kim Knits on YouTube. So she has a bunch of YouTube channels that are like, how did I this? How did I that? What happens when you do this? And so she, you know, just has a lot of very experimental knit dyeing videos, but also very accessible to someone who doesn't have a lot of resources. So like mm-hmm. she'll have some where she dyes something in the microwave or something like that. But she kind of really breaks it down really simply for someone who's experimenting at home. Mm-hmm. And she mostly uses food coloring for dyeing as opposed to acid dyes. But I watched a lot of her videos and played around with it. I also learned how to drop spindle because I've always loved the look of hand spun yarn. I just never have been able to actually afford a wheel or have the time to really spin yarn. But I have always been jealous of podcasters I watch who, you know, show off their hands, but I'm like, that's amazing. Yeah. And then when they make it into something, it's even more amazing. So that's kind of my initial exploration in color dyeing and spinning. And at that time, I felt like I would love to be an indie dyer, but didn't want to just enter into a saturated marketplace without a differentiator. Mm. And so I was like, okay, well, you know, if I ever have a good idea, then I'll try it. So fast forward a few years to maybe early 2016, I like literally January 2016, I was like, I wonder if, you know, if I dye wool, can I send it to a mill and will they spin it for me? And so I kind of did some initial research and I was like, oh wow, I can do this. People are willing to do this. And it actually took me 9 months to just decide, okay, I'm gonna do it. Like I made a really bad decision of like, all right, I'm gonna max out my credit card. It was like a small limit, like maybe like $1,200 is what I spent on like my initial materials, my first run, and decided to just kind of dive in and go for it. And so it's, my product has evolved a lot. Sort of the first year I spent really refining it. And so now it's really smooth and very consistent and sort of, I know exactly what I'm going for. And it's just kind of blossomed from there.
Mm, okay, so from what I'm understanding, you dye the yarn first. Yes. And then you send it off to a mill and they spin it up?
Yes, so I dye it when it's roving. So it's wool comes off of a sheep and it's super curly.
Yep.
And then it's washed and then processed into roving. And that's what I dye. And then I send that to the mill to spin.
Oh, okay. And thank you for explaining what that is. I'm just like, okay, I think I know what roving is, but I'm not entirely sure. Okay. Okay. That's really cool. I didn't know that mills could like spin yarn that was already dyed. It's like, from what I know, that most mills, they spin up the yarn that is not dyed, like they send you undyed yes. yarn, and then that's when you do all the dyeing. But whereas you kind of do the dyeing at an earlier process.
Right. Well, it took I got a lot of no's. The funny thing about mills, most of the mills are like busy like 6 months to a year out, the ones that I talked to. So my first mill, she was pretty small, but she was willing to give it a try. It didn't end up working out with her, but my second mill, who I've been with for 2 years now at this point, she, I think, already had experience dyeing, I mean, spinning dyed wool. Mm-hmm. And so she kind of knows and understands and doesn't, because also, you know, wool, the little pieces can come off. So when you run it through the machine, there's always a risk of like some wool getting left in there. And so you have to be cognizant of when you do like a pink and orange run and then you do a white one after that, you don't want pink and orange in your white one.
Oh, so, that's interesting.
It's not that that's substantial, but that's a, when you're using the same machinery to process multiple things, that's one of the considerations. But she was already experienced with that and has been very patient. We've been patient with each other through the process of refining and getting a consistent product. But most mills will say no because it's not super easy.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. I'm glad you were able to find somebody that was able to work with you the way that you wanted to. Wow.
Me too.
Yeah, there's just so much that goes into yarn dyeing. I'm just, all these little things you have to like take note of, like, oh, that yes. would be so stressful. That's why I'm not a yarn dyer. And thank you for taking, you know, for doing this for us.
Yeah, well, I love, like, it makes me so happy, so yeah. I love it.
Yeah. So another, so a question that I have for you, in addition to all the questions that I've been asking already, when you are dying, like, what is your biggest source of inspiration, like, when you come up with these colorways?
I take my inspiration from my environment, so sometimes that's the front cover of an album that I like. Sometimes it's some food. Sometimes it's a color scheme that I see around and I'm like, I think that would make a good colorway. And so usually it's one of those things. Or, you know, things like Black Hat, White Hat was inspired by a TV show. It's like really high concept, in-depth, sort of nerdy level watching and being really into this TV show called Westworld. But basically the main character, like, they don't tell you, but there's a guy in a white hat and a guy in a black hat, and it's the same character but just at the beginning, and he's very young and then very old and has
spoilers,
gone from,
I guess, for people who have
I'm sorry. Right, spoiler alert, you're like 2 years behind a great TV, so
right. Now that you explained, now I see Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's kind of a play on how my yarn, how each skein has a unique balance of the colors that go into it. Mm-hmm. So you can pick one that's a little bit more black or one that's a little bit more white. So that's an, and it's black and white, right? It's not rocket science, but there was like, it wasn't like, I want to make black and white yarn. It was, I'm inspired by the concept of this show, and that would be a great colorway. Mm. So it's definitely, I'm inspired by my environment.
Yeah, okay, that's cool. Just as a question, and feel free to not answer this if this is like secrets of the trade, but you mentioned before that the YouTuber that you're following should use things like food coloring for dyeing mm-hmm. the yarn versus using yeah. acidic dyes.
Yes.
Do you continue to use food coloring, or you shifted over to acidic dyes? Like, what materials do you use to create the colors, I guess?
I use Dharma acid dyes. Mm-hmm. So they come in a wide spectrum of colors. I usually focus on yellows, blues, and pinks, reds, unless there's a specific tone that's really hard to achieve, or like black eye. By black, because that's that would come out really ugly if you tried to mix and make a black with mm-hmm. dye. But I use that, so that's an acid dye, so I use citric acid as my acid source. And then so that's what I use. So the reason not to use food coloring is that professional dyes will have a stay power in the yarn, and food coloring really doesn't. Oh. Even though you dye it and it'll be there, it'll come out really quickly. Mm-hmm. And also you won't be able to get rich and vibrant colors. It's also probably very expensive.
Yeah.
And but there's like multiple levels of acid dye. So there's like Jacquard acid dye, which you've probably seen around. That's kind of like the basic level acid dye. It's like easy to work with and it's not gonna do crazy things. And then there's what are called like lanacet dyes, which use other chemicals and are kind of like a level up from the dyes that I use, but are a much more intensive process. So mm-hmm. I work in my kitchen with, you know, with tools that I've assembled, but so the dye that I use is color fast. Once it's set, is mixable and you know, won't like bleed as long as it's set properly. And so it works for, you know, the resources that I have.
Okay, oh, that's cool. I mean, I know nothing about dyeing yarn at all. So that was really fascinating just to really hear about the process and the materials that you use. Wow, that's really cool. So we talked, you touched upon this a little bit, but since starting Fully Spun, what are some of the other challenges you've faced along the way? So finding a mill that was willing to spin your dyed yarn was a challenge, but any other challenges yes. that you faced?
Oh, all sorts. so the mill was a big challenge, and that was a challenge to find the first one, but then when the first one kind of just, they just completely messed it up. And that kind of really was frustrating, like a few months into trying to start my business and then having to completely find another source mm-hmm. for a mill. I've also had to change wool suppliers because the first supplier I used, I felt was very unprofessional. Mm-hmm. So for example, I was just starting with my sock yarn at that time, and then they just discontinued the base that had nylon content with no warning. Mm-hmm. Like I literally went to ordered it, and they said, we don't have this. So to me, that's really unprofessional, especially when people are building businesses dependent on your yeah. business. So I had to find another source, and it's easy to find wool sources. It's a little bit harder to find blends. So I found one actually through your Fiber Muse Circle. I asked the question. Really? I was like, please help. And somebody sent me in the right direction. So that was really great.
Oh, yeah. That helped.
yes. And so that was a challenge. Getting people to pay attention has been a huge challenge. Mm-hmm. And especially in the light of what's happened over the last week in our community, mm-hmm. I think that kind of amplifies what I have been feeling. So
should we kind of explain what's been happening? Because when this episode comes out, I think it'll be like a little bit after the whole thing. Okay. But do you want to let's just quickly touch upon like what is this thing that's been happening in the community? It's just talking about the lack of representation and the visibility among makers of color. Definitely for yourself, like I'm just like, her yarn is amazing. Why isn't she getting more traction? Like, this is such a unique yarn. And, you know, sometimes it can be the answer as well. We kind of know why.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I am planning to record an episode tomorrow where I will share my opinion. I haven't shared it yet because I just have felt like it's so heavy.
Yeah.
And it's deep. And not even to get into the text of the actual post, because like people have gone off in one direction, but I feel a little bit differently about it as far as the language that was used. But I appreciate the conversation that has been sparked from it. Mm-hmm. But I've been feeling like at shows, people love it. Anytime anyone has a chance to actually see it in person and has no choice but to pay attention, you know, they love it and it does well. But as far as online, that has been my biggest struggle in growing my business. And I think a lot of it is, that's just how it works. And I haven't seen it as a disadvantage. It's just been where I've primarily placed my energy in trying to grow my business, is in trying to gain exposure and trying to branch out and grow audience. So my audience has more than doubled in the last week because people started paying attention. And it's not that someone would see me and see that I'm Black and not choose to not buy my yarn because of my race. That's not what happens most of the time, but it's that I think it's a reflection of an underlying bias. So we as humans like people who look like ourselves. And so when you see someone who is other, it's a little bit harder for you to speak up. Not for you to speak up, but a little bit harder for you to pay attention and notice and really see.
Connect maybe?
To connect, right. So, you know, people sort of get a benefit of the doubt when they have a lot of similarity. And so I've seen a lot of brands really go where they sort of make their break is when you get above a certain level of audience. And it happens because someone else, you know, says, hey, check out this brand. And then people go check it out. And so, one, when you're a person of color, it's a lot less likely for someone with a large platform to, you know, shout you out in that way because you probably don't have a relationship with them. But then, you know, there are people, you know, when you say, well, why does, you know, this person, they're doing the same thing I'm doing, but they have like, you know, tens of thousands of people, you know, in their audience, you know, what's the difference? And there's not really, when there's not really a physical difference and not really a fundamental difference in what people are doing, you have to say, okay, is it bias? And so the way to counteract bias, which we all have, is through intention. And I think that's the great result of what's happening over the last week is that people are saying, I don't want to perpetuate this issue. I want to see and hear people. I want to open myself to more people who I previously have not been aware of, you know, who should I follow, who should I check out? And so then they do, and then they make the decision to, you know, purchase a product or keep following a person or not based on whatever your brand message is and what you have to offer, but at least, you know, they're reaching out and looking and seeking.
That
is absolutely the right thing to do in a situation like that. And as people of color, we have to do that too. It's actually really hard to, you know, to find each other. And it's great that we, you know, there are lists and rivalry groups being created to sort of help people find each other, but as a person of color, you also need to, you know, I want to work with this dyer because, you know, they're a person of color, or or whatever you fit into. You also, because society, so many societies have been sort of, have had a history of colonialism of some sort. In our world, there's a bias towards the colonizers, which unfortunately are mostly white people. And so that's a lot of why the times why you see a lot of color bias in societies where maybe there aren't a large white population, but just a, you know, different groups of people. Or in societies like the United States, where there is a large mixed group of people, the media and what you see, and you know what you see in knitting magazines up until maybe the last year, it's all white people. Why is that?
Yeah.
You know, why it's all young people. Why, you know, why are there no older people in them? You know, why are there no overweight or disabled people?
Yeah.
And so the only way to overcome the bias that society has ingrained in you is through intention.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's what's happened to us in the last week, and I think it's amazing.
Yeah, I definitely think it is amazing, but I'm also just like, hopefully that for example, some of the publications and the other brands who are speaking up, I hope they keep to their word, basically.
Yes.
Yeah, they're talking the good talk, but now they actually have to follow up on that with action and making the effort to reach out and find brands such as yourself to work with and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, I agree.
Didn't expect this. Well, I mean, I guess maybe a little bit just based on the timing for the podcast to get so deep, but I think it's really important to talk about for sure. And you had mentioned that, like, you know, this week you had like lots of white makers have been able to find you, but I think most importantly, like, other people of color have been able to find you because I didn't know that so many, for example, just designers of color existed. Like,
right,
where have you been? Like, and really talented people, like, their marketing and branding is just so good. I'm just like, how
on
have
point,
I not
yes.
heard of you? Like,
yes,
it's just gave me like so many feelings, like, you know, both happy and sad ones and stuff.
Right.
Yeah. So it's really important to keep that attention going.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's audience is one of those things that reinforces itself. And so having a large audience, even with a smaller level of engagement, can, you know, keep your audience growing a lot more easily than a really small audience with maybe a higher level of engagement, just because of the way that numbers work. Mm-hmm. But I think that's also some of the reasons, like, why, like, Ravelry's hot right now is always the same few people, you know, most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's because the numbers reinforce themselves. And then all of a sudden, when you have that large audience, you have brand recognition. Everyone knows who you are. Or, you know, I say, I want to make a sweater. I don't think about, you know, someone who I just ran across in the last week. Her brand name is Bayron Handmade, Bayron. She just designed this really amazing sweater pattern that's super flattering for many shapes and sizes. You know, I don't think of her. You know, I think of Caitlin Hunter or Isabel Kramer or Hohi, who, I love Hohi Locatelli's patterns. Like, they're really well written, and she deserves every bit of audience that she has. I'm not saying that any of them don't, but, you know, them having an audience of that size is also sort of self-reinforcing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess going a little bit off of this conversation, what advice would you offer anybody out there who's wanting to start their own hand-dyed yarn company? Or maybe to someone who's a person of color who's seen all these conversations and they're just like, you know what, I want to try and get, you know, become a part of this, whether it's a designer or specifically with hand-dyed yarn. What advice would you have for them?
That's hard. I think I would suggest to just do it, to go for it and try and work with what you have. So understand your limitations. So, you know, if you don't have much capital to start out with, then, you know, work with what you've got and you can build. And as long as you reinvest, it will multiply. Mm-hmm. You're your best investment.
Yes.
It's not going to be easy or fast. I see a lot of people, especially like new designers, complain, oh, nobody's looking at my design. What's going on? But, you know, in a world where everything's screaming at you from left and right, which is the internet, it's hard to sort of get people to stick to it and pay attention, period. You know, no matter what disadvantages or advantages you may have, it's still hard to get people to pay attention. So I would say be patient, but also be aggressive and make bold choices. So for example, my first show, I did about 6 months in I did about 9 months in. It was Frederick Fiber Fest. It was a pretty new show. I needed to borrow, the money for the actual show fee from my mom. I was like, I'll pay you back right after the show, but can I borrow this money and I'll take care of everything else? And it ended up paying off, you know, and in just that, you know, I made $1,200 that day. Nice. And 9 months earlier, I had started and built an inventory and got equipment and stuff with that same amount of money. And so make sure that you, as soon as you are able, get into a show, because that's where people are really going to be able to connect with you and to start to relate and to see you. And mm-hmm. that's where your audience is at the show. So if you're a yarn dyer, try to do a show as soon as you can. Sitting on the internet is not going to be super, is not going to be as successful as getting in front of people. Until you build an audience.
Okay. That's really good advice, I think. And I don't think a commonly heard one, I think. I'm not sure. So you're out there giving, like, this is your opinion right there for sure.
Right. Thank you.
Well, thank you for that. I think I'll definitely
go on day.
So our last question, well, for now, would be, how do you hope to impact the fiber community through your work at Fully Spun?
That's a lot. So small scale, from myself to my customer, so part of my growth that has happened over the last couple of years is that I've started to say, I really like color. I look great in it. I want to use that as part of my expression of who I am. I want to choose certain patterns as an expression of my culture. And, you know, I'm going to wear these things without fear or shame, and, you know, use that to tell the world something about myself. Mm-hmm. And so I hope that through, you know, selling yarn to people, to then create something that speaks to them and something that shows a piece of them off to the world, I think is really what I would like to contribute. And also to make sure that, you know, it's always high quality. It's a great experience to use it. That as much as possible, they come away happy and enriched from the experience of working with my yarn, then I've done my job. And the plus is seeing the finished object and it looks amazing. And, you know, like something that I never expected it to look like. That always is like a little extra bonus point as far as me being happy with my work.
I love that. I also liked how you started with like the small, like just from with you and the customer thinking about the impact on that level too, which is so important. Right. Well, thank you so much, Brooke, for coming on today to talk about your yarn and the work that you do. It was really lovely talking to you again.
Thank you.
Is this the first time like actually like talking like face to face?
It is.
Okay. Yeah, because I think I might have watched your podcast before. You did like a 24-hour charity live stream or something like that.
And I was like, I did.
Background throwing money at you.
I appreciate it. That was a great, I don't know what word to use, but I really enjoyed doing that. I've been thinking about doing that again, and you know, so getting like a list of people, furloughed people who have like GoFundMes, and saying, you know, pick one and send them something, you know, and let's get together and share some love.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, definitely is going to be very helpful right now. So where can people find you, Brooke, if they wanted to check out your work, the lovely work that you do that you should, people should be looking at?
You can find me on Instagram at I Am Fully Spun, IAMFULLYSPUN. And from there, my profile link gets you everywhere else that I am. My website is fullyspun.com. My YouTube is Brooke Knits, where I have the Fully Spun podcast. Mm-hmm. And then on Ravelry, I'm this Brooke Knits, where I'm really bad about posting my projects. So, but I do enjoy chatting to people. And, you know, sometimes people ask me, like, well, what should I do with this? And I'm like, I always have an opinion, so I'm happy to share it.
So yeah, that's where people can find you. By the way, do you have any more Fire Dreamer or Ice Dreamer kits in stock?
Well, I just sold out of Ice Dreamer. Nice. I see two Fire Dreamer kits over there, and I will have three of each with me at Vogue Knitting Live and at Stitches West. Mm-hmm. I'm sure this will get posted after Vogue Knitting Live, but I'll have six with me at Stitches West at the end of February.
Awesome. Just to let everybody know, and this is going to be a little gift for Brooke as well, but if you purchase anyone, like the Fire Dreamer or the Ice Dreamer set, you'll get the pattern that goes that I designed for them for free. Also be free for YouTube, Brooke. You don't have to buy a license for that. So you get a free pattern. So you buy her yarn, you get a free pattern to go along with it. Specifically designed for that yarn. So yeah, definitely check out her work. Thank you again so much, Brooke. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for listening. See you next time. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Fiber Muse podcast. I certainly hoped that you enjoyed the show. If you would like to support the show, then you can do so easily through our Patreon. Patreon is a platform that connects creators together with their fans and allows the fans a quick and easy way to support their favorite creators every month on a small budget. So for just $2 a month, you'll get early access to the Fiber Muse podcast episode, plus exclusive access to any of the live recordings that I do for the show. You can go to www.patreon.com/outofknits to get signed up today. Thank you so much and see you next time. Bye.